This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After six seasons, the final episode of The L Word aired on Showtime this past Sunday. Some viewers expressed disappointment with the finale's cliffhanger ending, but some also wrote about how important the program's been to them over the years and how much they'll miss it. It was the first show on mainstream TV to feature a largely lesbian cast, and it addressed a wide range of issues, including adoption, marriage, custody, and race.
Oh, it's a shame Johnny Cochran's dead. Flamboyant African-American lawyer arguing on behalf of your picture-perfect white hetero family. That would have been perfect for you, because, as you know, we're going to be playing the race card.
It's not a card. Something I know to be firmly and intrinsically true. Tina's not qualified to parent a biracial child.
Oh, yeah, and I was qualified to live and sleep with one for 8 years.
Obviously, you weren't qualified for that either.
Over the years, the L Word became a source of both validation and frustration to many lesbians and bisexuals who watched it, and following its departure, it's impossible not to note that there are now no lesbian lead characters on any mainstream primetime cop shows, sitcoms, or medical dramas. If you watched the L Word, what did the program mean to you? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, your letters, including a note on a dated reference we made to Spock and Kirk. We'll be talking with the author of a book called I Love It When You Talk Retro. So fess up, geezers. What expression do you use that leaves the younger generation clueless? Email us now, if you know how. talk@npr.org. But first, the last word on the L Word. We begin with Sarah Warren, who joins us from her home in Washington State. She's the founder and editor of a website called AfterEllen.com. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, nice to be here.
And I have to confess that until I started preparation for this show today, I'd never seen the L Word. What have I been missing?
Well, I hope that you didn't start with this last season, because it was not one of its finest. But it, as you described it pretty well, actually, it's a series about the lives of a group of mostly gay women in L.A., exploring their romantic relationships, friendships, families, work, and touch on all sorts of different issues, race, adoption, stuff that's both specifically of concern to the queer community and stuff that's of interest to everybody, things like, you know, infidelity. So it's ran for six seasons, and I think the way that you described it as both validating and frustrating for viewers is a really good way to put it. A lot of people feel a very strong emotional attachment to the show, also very frustrated with it, especially with how it ended.
Without spoiling it for those who maybe missed the final episode and pay cable being pay cable, this is going to be running for a while. But nevertheless, what was the frustration about?
Well, the good news is I can't actually spoil it because nothing happened in the finale.
Oh, really?
And that's actually what the outrage is about. Yeah.
A Sopranos-style ending.
Exactly, except a little bit worse because they announced the Sopranos at least had the element of surprise going for it. And it was the first one to really do that in recent television history. This is basically like a knockoff of the Sopranos, but with the creator having announced halfway through, because the whole sixth season was revolving around this question of who killed Jenny, who's one of the most annoying characters on the show. And so throughout the season, they laid the groundwork for every one of the characters to have a motive to kill her. And then they didn't answer the question. And the problem is that Eileen Chaykin said publicly to the LA Times, kind of in the middle of the season, I don't have any plans to answer it. So there wasn't even this element of surprise. Everybody knew they weren't going to answer it. She didn't answer it. And then she also didn't resolve most other plot lines. And it was very disjointed and not well written, very uneven, bad pacing, not, you know, well acted. That's the one thing that's been pretty consistent. But very depressing for a lot of people.
It sounds like the last season of a lot of television shows, which is why it's the last season. But nevertheless, in terms of the validation, over 6 years, that's been awfully important to a lot of people.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people have said to put it in one way, that the L Word has helped them both, helped a lot of women come out. And it's also helped a lot of people feel good about being gay, because the L Word has definitely left its mark. I mean, it has left a big legacy, and probably the biggest one being that it made lesbians cool, which sounds kind of silly, like big deal, but for a group that's been so marginalized and so scorned in our society, that's actually a big deal. And the other thing it did is it made lesbians the focus for the first time ever, rather than peripheral supporting characters. And it also countered other stereotypes. It showed the diversity, some of the diversity within the lesbian community, from deaf lesbians to trans lesbians to that all lesbians aren't white. So it did a lot of really good things and made a lot of people, it gave us a show of our own, so to speak. But then it also, along with that, there was a lot of, the show itself wasn't always the best, particular seasons, especially a lot of uneven writing, lack of continuity. It sometimes had an after-school special feeling to it, you know, where you were, it's like the creator was hitting you over the head with storylines, with messages.
The issue of the day, yeah.
Yeah, like the latest one being Max having a baby, because we all know about the guy who had a baby that was in Newsweek because he's trans. And so then all of a sudden that shows up on the L Word. And, you know, a little too much of stuff being shoved down our throats, or killing off Dana, who's one of the more popular characters in the third season. And then repackaging it as if the show was doing a service by showcasing the horrors of breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
When really it was more about just getting rid of a cast member for cost-cutting reasons or whatever it was. And, you know, and people can see through that. And I think what it all boils down to is that with every show, the creator has to achieve a balance between fulfilling his or her creative vision and satisfying the show's fans. You're never going to completely satisfy everybody, but neither should you try to make it all about your creative vision and not at all about the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And this show erred far too much on the side of fulfilling Eileen's creative vision and really to the point where Eileen even said publicly, I don't really care what the fans think.
We're talking.
And then, yeah.
We're talking with Sarah Warren about The L Word, which completed its six-year run this past weekend. If you watched the show, what did it mean to you? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll begin with Amy. Amy with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Well, hey, Neil.
Hi.
I have my radio down, so I missed some of the latest comments. I guess what I'd like to say about the show is I feel kind of ambivalent about it. The storylines made me cringe a little bit. I felt rich people hang with rich people, at least in my world, and poor people hang with poor people, kind of regardless of our sexuality these days. I'm not saying there aren't issues any longer, because obviously there are. But Shane, you know, the ex-prostitute hanging out with, and I forget that character's name, the one that worked at the museum.
Right.
I kind of found it hard to believe, and some of the stories, just the longer the seasons kept going, they became more and more incredible, and I was just a little disappointed. It had an opportunity to be really great, and I felt like it was just kind of fantastic, but I watched it for the fantasy. I mean, I'm 39 years old, and it made me feel like a teenager because I'm in love with Carmen.
Oh, you're in love with Carmen.
Yes, I am.
Oh, we have a clip of tape from the program, which features, in fact, Carmen talking to her partner, Tina, from the third season.
Oh, listen to this. Monogamy is common among birds.
That's great, because I love birds.
It is the practice of having a single mate during a period of time. Does that mean anything to you?
I'm willing to try.
There's Carmen for you.
Yeah, that was actually Carmen with Shane, but close enough. You did better than most straight men would do about that. So you get props for that.
I'm not sure that's a compliment, but go ahead.
It is, I promise, it is. But to Amy who called in, yeah, I think Carmen is one of the most popular characters on the show, even though she was only on for two seasons, actually. Has quite a lot of followers.
Amy, thanks.
Thanks for letting me call in.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Susan. Susan with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you.
I'm great. Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to make the comment that growing up as a lesbian in America, I'm actually in my 40s. I feel like, well, obviously we grew up in a heterosexual world in the sense of the media that we see it every day. We live it every day with newspapers, magazines, television shows, et cetera. And I feel like this has incorporated us alongside of the heterosexual society.
And obviously, if you're not living in a place like Los Angeles or New York or San Francisco,
Exactly. Like Raleigh.
Well, I didn't want to pick any place out in particular. yeah. Will you miss it, Susan?
What's that, sir?
Are you going to miss it?
Oh, absolutely. I feel it's kind of a disappointment, not so much that I enjoy watching the program as much as it gives us a continued voice to live alongside of the heterosexual society.
Hmm. Well, we're going to talk more about that in the next segment of the program. But in terms of that voice, are you going to miss the fact that there are, in fact, no programs at this point on primetime TV that do have lesbian main characters?
Absolutely. And I think it surprised me that nothing has jettisoned from that program as a result of its existence.
Nothing has spun off from the program, or,
yes,
you know, that it hasn't had more of an effect. Sarah?
Yeah, well, she's right, and we should talk about that more, about the total invisibility. But just to clarify, there is actually officially a spinoff of this show in the works, but it's a women in prison drama, and that's actually one of the problems with the way the show ended, is that a lot of people felt like, and me included, like the last season was just teeing up was one big launching pad for this spinoff about women in prison. And that's why they incorporated a murder mystery in a show that was not at all. It's like all of a sudden Brothers and Sisters or Grey's Anatomy being all about who killed, you know, Dr. McDreamy. You know, I mean, it just didn't make any sense. And the whole season was about that. But it was a lot of people's perception that that's just teeing up the spinoff in which one of the characters, Alice, goes to prison.
Susan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And this we got from Katie. As a 20-something bisexual female, the L-word was my Sex in the City of the queer world. It helped me feel comfortable exploring my sexuality and becoming confident in it. With that being said, I also felt that it could be somewhat hurtful in the depiction of lesbians, trans, bisexuals, in the sense that it sexualized them. The show depicted the queer community as a trendy and Barbie-esque L.A. scene. However, that's television. I will miss the show tremendously, especially the first two seasons, which gave a special place in my heart and a time in my life. Thank you all for that. We're going to ask Sarah Warren to stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about how mainstream TV does not have lesbian lead characters anymore after the departure of the L word. How do depictions of minority groups on TV or the lack of those stories affect attitudes among viewers? More on that in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about mainstream TV and depictions of gays and lesbians and other underrepresented groups, how those depictions change people's attitudes or not. Sometimes Showtime's The L Word signed off last weekend, the only primetime mainstream show with lesbian lead characters. If you watch The L Word, did you learn anything? Does television change your mind about groups you're not familiar with? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And there's a conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Sarah Warren is still with us. She's the founder and editor of AfterEllen.com. And joining us now from a studio at KUSC in Los Angeles is Larry Gross. He's a professor at the University of Southern California, Annenberg, and the author of Up From Invisibility, Lesbians, Gay Men, and the Media in America. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here.
And I have to say, we've gotten a bunch of emails after I said in the introduction that the departure of the L Word left no main lesbian characters on primetime television shows, mainstream television shows. And we got these emails from Frank, doesn't 13 on house count. From Randall, she's not in drama, but she certainly is on primetime, and she's openly lesbian, Rachel Maddow. And this from Lindsay, one of the main doctors on Grey's Anatomy is a lesbian, Dr. Callie Torres. She struggles with her sexuality on the show and dates women. Well, obviously, Rachel Maddow is not in a scripted show, but the other two are not main characters, are they?
No, they're not. They also, you could have mentioned the character of Bianca on the soap opera All My Children. In many ways, that's one of the more important examples, because soap operas are a genre that develop characters and keep them for a long time, Bianca being a central character as the daughter of probably the most central character on that program.
But if we go outside prime time, I guess we'd have to say that the most important lesbian on TV is certainly Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes, although part of Ellen DeGeneres's sort of bargain with the media is to underplay that aspect. It sort of became her most defining characteristic when she came out on her show, Ellen, in the late 90s. But when she came back as a talk show host, for the most part, that has been unstated and implicit rather than explicit.
Now, do representations of minority groups, whether they're lesbians or African-Americans or Latinos or anybody else on television, do they actually change people's attitudes towards those groups?
I think you can say that they do. They do it in part because the fact that they show up is a statement of validation to the society. We are, as I think you can tell from some of the discussion with listeners about the L word, we are a society in which presence on that center stage of the media is considered part of being a full citizen, part of being a member of society. You know, you've heard people say, you know, this is the time when I see myself reflected. You know, that sense is very important. So for gay people, it's a validation of a level of acceptance, and I think it also communicates that message to society at large. One reason why there are a fair number of people who are upset and opposed when these images appear, because they are taken as a kind of conferral of respectability.
Sarah Warren, do you agree with that characterization?
Yeah, you know, I do. Absolutely. I think television is also sort of our campfire, our cultural campfire around which we share stories as a society. And so for us not to be represented in those stories means we're kind of not represented at all. So it's almost like we're invisible. But I want to go back to something you said a minute ago with the readers who wrote in. Those characters that they mentioned, 13 and there's a character on Bones and Callie on Grey's Anatomy, they're all actually bisexual. They're not lesbians. They're explicitly not lesbians. They've made that clear on the show. And I think that that actually, the fact that they called them lesbians, and that it is indicative of the problem. Most TV writers even do that. Shonda Rhimes even called Callie a lesbian a few days after the episode in which she decides she's not a lesbian, she's bisexual. So there's this general unwillingness to acknowledge or inability to acknowledge the difference between lesbian and bisexual women among straight people and even some lesbians. But for most people in the queer community, there is a difference. And it's great that bisexual women are getting more visibility, but they're actually getting visibility to the exclusion of any lesbian characters at this point.
Except on lesbian or gay TV channels, in which case...
Yes, except on gay TV channels, absolutely.
In which case you've written, in fact, bisexuals are underrepresented.
Yeah, and that's been an interesting trend. It's funny, as soon as, you know, it's the old saying about you take care of your own house before you point at others. I mean, as much as we do talk, right, we do a lot of television criticism on AfterEllen.com and movie reviews and stuff, and it's... generally, bisexual women are portrayed very badly, frequently, until in film, on TV recently, they've started being portrayed well. Within lesbian-only shows like X's and O's on Logo or The L Word on Showtime, bisexual women pretty much don't exist, or bisexuality is sort of dismissed and marginalized. So it's kind of interesting that we're doing the same thing in a way to a minority within our group that the larger society is doing to us as a minority.
And we should mention AfterEllen.com, the place you work for, is associated with Logo, the TV
yes.
channel. So just to
yeah.
Make an interest clear here. And I was interested, Larry Gross, in your theory mm-hmm. that, in fact, minorities, and whether that's lesbians, bisexuals, whatever, there's a continuum that television seems to work on in this regard, that they start as minor characters and work their way up to being leads.
Well, yeah, this is true. It was true of movies, and then it, you know, was carried over into television, that minorities begin by simply not being there or being there in very limited ways. As they begin to, you know, get on stage to be more visible, they tend to come on as victims or villains. Villains are quite common because then the hero can defeat them and they're sinister. Lesbians very often showed up as sinister villainous characters. They can also be victims. They're victims of violence, which is often why we feel sorry for them and then, you know, sort of treat them as human, which is nice, I suppose, as they're, you know, suffering or dying. AIDS brought out a lot of that. Or victims of ridicule, which is one of the most common ways in which particularly gay male characters, but also lesbians appear, where simply their stereotypic attributes, which is how you know they're gay, are treated as funny, as amusing. The mannerisms, the talk, the walk, the gestures. This can be turned around much more recently as, the character of Jack on Will and Grace.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the history of gay people in the media, all of those attributes were treated as just, you know, inherently funny.
Comic relief.
Comic relief, yeah. Think of the sissy characters in 1930s and 40s movies. Very common.
And then they move on to become the sidekick sometimes?
They're often the sidekick. It's partially what we were talking about before, which is they almost never, and in fact in non-cable programming, are never the center of the story. They're never center stage. They're always peripheral. The new, I guess, progressive development is to have them part of an ensemble, a family. Brothers and Sisters would be a good example of that, where you have this weaving of threads of members of a family. So they're part of it. Or 6 Feet Under would have been an example like
right,
that,
yeah.
Where they're part of that thread. But they're never the protagonist of the story. That was begun with Ellen and, you know, backed away from quickly.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Let's go to Joey. Joey calling us from Oakland.
Hi. I wanted to say, you know, first of all, Aldee, I love a lot of the things that the woman from After Ellen has been saying. I want to echo an earlier caller, though. I for one, as a butch identified lesbian, I'm really glad that the show is off the air and done. And I think it's a series that should have ended at the second season. The writing was so horrible, and it has done a lot to bring up certain issues for sure. But really, it just kept representing over and over and over again this very tiny portion of what is what lesbian culture is. And in that regard, it has done a lot of damage, I feel, to lesbians and their image of themselves, particularly butch lesbians. That is a whole subculture that within the lesbian culture gets smashed on all the time. It's as if it's as if we don't exist. And to have the L word be something that got so popular and yet we as a group were not represented. And there were these little teeny little hints here and there with certain characters, but never really. It's always that. It's supposed to be the middle class, you know, lesbian with skinny and pretty, and it's created this term now that we even joke about called the L-word dyke, the L-word type of lesbian, the L-word dyke. And that's one that is not going to be threatening to the culture at large.
And Sarah Warren, I know you've also written and carried comments by people who would agree with Joey. And nevertheless, isn't that an awful lot of freight to put on one show when there's just one show?
Yeah, you know, I do. I totally hear Joey, and there are a lot of other women who feel that way. I personally think it was probably too much to ask of the first lesbian show to include butch lesbians who have been, especially when the show started, who were really taboo in our society. What I love now, though, is that you can have someone like Ellen and, frankly, Rachel Maddow, who is single-handedly making butch chic cool in her own way. I love that we have that now. I think the L word could have done a little better job of integrating at least even one butch character, but on the other hand, they did have everything else in the kitchen sink in there. But I think it goes back to, again, you know, it's a balance between you want your show to stay on the air, you want it to attract a broad audience, including straight people, but you also don't want to turn your back on the audience that it's aimed at. And, you know, I think they could have done a little bit better job, but I also, you know, they are working in Hollywood, and I think most lesbians understand that it is a show. I think the second or third L word, the next shows that come along, if there ever are any, better include some butch characters.
Joey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Randy. Randy with us from Hoover, Alabama.
Yes, hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Randy. Go ahead, please.
Well, hey, basically, I come from a little bit different background. I am a heterosexual. I'm married, two kids. I have been somewhat of a homophobe, mainly because I just didn't know anything about it or how to appreciate people despite their differences. And, you know, I guess to start off my comment, my set of beliefs have taught me to appreciate people, but not necessarily everything that they do. So I'm not here to bash or anything like that. It's actually a positive comment I have. Basically, I believe in a straight philosophy, and what I've seen though with Ellen DeGeneres is that I myself can relate to just being a human being. You know, it has nothing to do with homosexuality, but seeing her on TV
dancing to music, you know, enjoying people, talking to people, and then looking at myself, and I'm going, well, I do the same thing. You know, I'm not on TV, but, you know, I turn on music and I dance and have a good time. I love talking to people. I love being in front of people. And it gave me a chance to relate to a different type of person, and it actually took the difference away. You know, we make different choices, but I'm able to appreciate a person, you know, really despite, you know, what choices they make. And like I said, it really took the difference away. And, you know, I can't really say I appreciate when the focus of somebody's, you know, national appeal or TV appeal is their sexual preference. You know, I really, that doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, if you have a choice of what you're doing and then you're still relational as a human being, that's something I can appreciate. You know what I mean? Basically, you know, I like the fact that she's down to earth. I like the fact that there are a lot of people out there who are down to earth, and I do have some homosexual friends who, you know, we don't agree with the same things, but we're still able to appreciate and respect each other on a human level. And you know, Ellen DeGeneres, you know, she's
right.
She is kind of like that example for me. Like I said, not that I agree with her, it's just
all right,
I'm able to relate.
Randy, we have this email on this similar point from Adam in Salt Lake City. I think Ellen DeGeneres does more to help the lesbian gay community than some of these other shows, precisely because it is subtle. You judge her based on all her characteristics instead of just her sexuality. Some of these other shows, as mentioned earlier, push too hard. They seem to show sexuality above all other aspects of their life. I don't like Sex and the City for the same reason. Gay or straight, over-sex shows are over-sex shows. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
We're talking about, well, the last word on the L word and about representation on mainstream broadcast television. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on. This is Tom. Tom with us from Syracuse, New York.
Hi. Yeah, in regards to your earlier comments about gay people being seen in the media and if that's helpful, I'm a gay man who grew up with a dad who was in the Navy station with the Marines for 20 years. Then he became a police officer. I mean, we'd never once talked about being gay or mentioned the word gay, and one day he's sort of like, so, you like that show Will and Grace? You know, I think you might like it. And I was like, well, why am I going to like this show, Dad? And he's like, well, you know, there's a guy in it, he's gay. And I mean, that was the first time he had ever said the word gay. So it was kind of sometimes think of the world as pre-Will and Grace and post-Will and Grace, because these weren't only non-threatening people, they were people that you liked, and then Jack ended up being powerful. You know, he wasn't just a victim.
You know, I think that's a really good point, and it really gets to a lot of the emails that I get from all of our readers saying that these shows help open up dialogue with stray people, or as Randy and Adam were talking about Ellen's influence. You know, I think a lot of people, as Larry has said, have mentioned Ellen's sort of bargain and somewhat criticized Ellen for her role being that her popularity is partly based on the fact that she doesn't talk about being gay that much. I actually think you need both. And I appreciated Randy's honesty about where he's coming from and his point of view about how he can relate to her. And I think it's true that you need people like Ellen for whom they sort of downplay their sexuality because that helps some straight people relate. And you also need shows like The L Word or other, you know, X's and O's or other shows where being a lesbian is sort of front and center. You really need both, I think. And they appeal to different people and achieve different goals. And hopefully there are more shows like Will and Grace. There are open dialogues between especially a lot of kids and their parents.
And Larry Gross, isn't that mm-hmm. the point? If you can find out that there's an awful lot of different ways to be black or a lot of different ways to be Latino or a lot of different ways to be lesbian, well, they turn out to be people.
I think that's really important point that, you know, it's not just one thing or the other. There's lots of different types of not just sexuality, but people inside of their own skins. And the more we see that, I think the more we all kind of become a group of people rather than individuals within a group.
Larry Gross?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The burden that gay people bear as a minority, because every minority is similar but also unique and different from others, is that of invisibility and unspeakability. So for many years and for most of the lifetimes of many of your listeners, simply saying the word gay, as your caller said, you know, his father had never said the word. the unwillingness to admit, to acknowledge, and to say the word, to speak the word, has been the problem. So simply being there, and being there in many different guises, and as some of your other callers have said, being there as butch as well as femme, being there as working class as well as middle class, being there in all the variety of humanity is really an important accomplishment.
Tom, thanks very much for the call.
Hey, thanks for the program.
Appreciate it. And Larry Gross, thanks for your time today.
Sure.
Larry Gross joined us from KUSC in Los Angeles, where he directs the School of Communication at USC Annenberg, and he's the author of Up From Invisibility, Lesbians, Gay Men, and the Media in America. And we'd also like to thank Sarah Warren for her time, the founder and editor of AfterEllen.com, with us from her home in Washington State. Up next, your letters and a conversation about retro references. Talk of the Nation, NPR News.